All right, thanks.
Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, July 16th, and we're here for a public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing very briefly on 2302 so Senator Clarno can testify, and then I'll close the public hearing and we'll go back to our agenda. So a public hearing is now open on House Bill 2302. Senator Clarno, welcome, and thank you for taking time from your schedule to be here.
I'm delighted to be here, Chair Morgan, and I certainly appreciate you taking my testimony now so that I can make some appointments we have scheduled back in our office. And I am Bev Clarno, State Senator from District 27, which includes all of Deschutes County. And I'm here because of House Bill 2302, which we desperately need in this state to provide the training that for people that we can put in some family wage jobs. In Central Oregon, we've had a huge influx, tremendous growth of people to this area that have required a lot of private sector or service jobs, and a lot of the family wage jobs have been lost through the timber industry and et cetera and agriculture constraints. So this kind of availability to have training for these 600 jobs will be a tremendous help to us. So I am supporting the bill, and I'd like very much to read into the record and submit to this committee a letter from someone who can't be here today. My co-worker in my district, Senator or Representative Ben Westland. Dear Susan, I thank you for the consideration of House Bill 2302, which proposes to provide critical training resources for the state of Oregon as it encourages businesses to expand and locate in the state. As it happens, we have a good example at our doorstep. It is a proposal by T-Mobile, a major international wireless company, to locate a 600-person call center somewhere in the region. The two options are Boise, Idaho, and Redmond, Oregon. Obviously, to no one's surprise, we favor the Redmond location. One of the critical dimensions in our effort to recruit T-Mobile is to offer help the company with the costs of training new employees. The state of Idaho has training dollars available to encourage T-Mobile to locate in Boise. While Oregon competes very well in general, one of the potential deficits is a training resource, and that's what House Bill 2302 provides. Susan, I appreciate your willingness to schedule House Bill 2302 for a hearing, and I encourage you to move forward on the bill with purpose and dispatch. Passage will mean a lot to all parts of Oregon, including Central Oregon, as we work to pull the state out of this stubborn recession. The jobs that ride on this decision are critical for an area such as Redmond. Thank you for your consideration. Warmest regards, Representative Ben Westland. Thank you.
Questions or comments for Senator Clarno? Thank you very much, Senator. I appreciate your time.
And thank you again for taking this out of order. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I close the public hearing on House Bill 2302. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3603 and Senate Bill 800. Those of you who've read these bills probably notice a similarity between the two of them. And Mr. Bender, could you please give us the view of the world through the eyes of the Legislative Fiscal Office?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. You have two packages or two piles of materials I've distributed to you today. One of them is under the yellow page, and the other is under the orange page. And the yellow page pile is the information on House Bill 3603 and Senate Bill 800, both of which are identical. And I've put together a very high-level and brief description of what these bills do. You have a number of people who are coming to testify, so I don't want to take up too much of your time right now. But just note that what these bills do is they establish the Oregon Nursing Shortage Coalition Committee to coordinate funding for nursing education programs designed to address the state's nursing shortage. The bill directs OHSU to distribute grants to support nursing education programs at community and four-year colleges and universities in the state. My reading of this bill is that OHSU's role is simply administrative. They are not determining where the grant monies will go. Those determinations are being made by this coalition committee. The bill authorizes the committee to adopt criteria for the award of grant funds. It limits the use of grants and criteria for awarding these grants. It appropriates $1 of general fund to OHSU for this grant program, and it authorizes OHSU to accept contributions in federal funds for this grant program. I will note to you that the co-chairs have approved this bill for your consideration for public hearing only to review the possibility of determining whether the program would work without any general fund support. They don't have any general fund available for this program at this time, so if this bill is moved out, they would ask you to eliminate the dollar appropriation and to see whether this bill would work with the other funds and federal funds to finance it.
Questions or comments for Mr. Bender from the committee members?
Mr. Bender?
Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We expect to see some federal funds flowing into nursing training because of the shortage of nurses across the nation. Is it expected that we will, in fact, see that money and go through this program?
Under this bill, those funds could be directed into this particular program. I don't have information on the extent to which those funds would be available at this time. I don't know if any of the people who will be testifying today will have that. If they're not able to provide that for you, I will get that information for you before you go into work session.
Further questions or comments for Mr. Bender? Chair calls Representative Lori Monis Anderson and Ms. Alice Nelson. Good morning, Representative Monis Anderson.
Good morning, Representative Morgan. Thank you so much. I'm Lori Monis Anderson, State Representative from Gresham, and I want to thank you so much for hearing this bill. I truly do believe that it's extremely important for this bill to be worked and passed out. I have given you some testimony that gives you a little bit of background of the critical nursing shortage that we have here in the state of Oregon and how there is a goal to double the number of students that we graduate from our nursing schools. We have our nurses come from OHSU community colleges and private universities. What has been really unique about working on this bill, we have gathered people from the hospital association, from hospitals, from community colleges, from OHSU. I think you're going to go into that, right, Alice? We came together to see how we could support a coordinated effort to bring increase the number of nurses that we are training, and this will allow us to award grants and have everyone at the table instead of competing individually, community colleges just going out for money and for OHSU just going out for money. This is a coordinated effort. The Oregon Nursing Leadership Council has worked several years now, and there now is a common curriculum throughout the state that they are working on. We need to coordinate our efforts. It's extremely highly competitive now to get money, and this bill would show when we are applying for grants that the state of Oregon is having all of the stakeholders working together, and I think that we will have a much better chance of bringing money into the state. We have also, I forgot to mention, AFL-CIO also. So thank you for hearing these bills. We have a number of people testifying, and they can give you a little bit more detail as to the specific programs that they have and why this bill is necessary.
Representative Monis Anderson, if I might just ask for clarification on a couple of points. What this bill would do that isn't in place right now is provide a platform for cooperation that doesn't currently exist. Am I correct in assuming?
Correct. Well, there's the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, but this is it didn't include all of the stakeholders, and this would set up the structure to have, a coordinated effort.
The other question that I'd like to ask you is, given the direction that we have from the co-chairs concerning the general fund issue that Mr. Bender has raised, is that a killer to this concept, or is it worthwhile to go ahead with the concept without any general fund?
Of course, we would like about $8 to $10 million put into this fund. And
that having been said,
but what we really do is want the structure. There are, we know, federal funds that could come in. There are grants that could be written, and in fact, I know that maybe some people will be speaking about the grants that have already been sent in to try to provide funding. So true, we would really like to have money, but it won't, this structure is really needed, this infrastructure is really needed for money that's going to be coming in the future, I'm sure.
I have a couple more questions, but I'd like to give Mrs. Nelson a chance to be part of the conversation. Mrs. Nelson, could you address the committee about the bill and so that we can start talking to you?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, Chair Morgan and members of the committee. I'm Alice Nelson, legislative assistant to Senator David Nelson, who is from Senate District 29 and serves the four northeast eastern counties in Oregon. Of Morrow, Umatilla, Union, and Wallawa. Senator Nelson and Representative Mona Sanderson both were challenged with the recognition of the shortage of nurses in our state and in the nation. And as we started working on this, Representative Mona Sanderson and I decided that this basically brings together the economic development, the workforce issue there, education, and other segments of the community that can help to promote a well-trained and skilled workforce for our state. These bills are a collaborative effort. They were done in conjunction with the stakeholders. I have given you a list of the stakeholders and the people that represented them. And as you can see, we had the Hospital Association, the Community Colleges, the Oregon Nurses Association, Independent Colleges, OHSU, the Office of Multicultural Health, and the Oregon Healthcare Association. So we tried to hit all segments of the community, the employers, the educators, and the workforce developers. I know that one of your questions is, where will the money come from? And we think that it could come from federal dollars. We know that that is in the works. We have been in discussions with the governor's office on the federal workforce dollars. This fits very nicely with the next bill that you're going to hear, and that it really is workforce related. Grants, and as Representative Mona Sanderson already has indicated, some of this work is already in progress, and the reason for that is anticipation of the passage of this bill, and then public and private partnerships, which we are very much encouraging. Blue Mountain Community College has already worked out a situation where they have gone into, because in our area, the slots, the clinical slots for training nurses are in a shortage also. The community college has brokered a deal with some Washington hospitals in the Tri-Cities to join forces, and they, in fact, will be doubling their number of nursing students next fall as a result of this partnership. And we hope that this bill will encourage others to do the same. I know other partnerships are already happening around the state, but I guess the critical thing to us is that through this bill, it can be a coordinated statewide effort. And if we get this infrastructure in place, we believe that it will not be just happening in certain corners of the state and in just certain areas, but that together all of these groups can do a much better job of providing the opportunities for students and for a well-trained and highly skilled workforce. It is a process for passing through dollars. is established in the bill, and it's a process for accepting grants and granting dollars and then deciding which areas or which grants we have the funds to provide and which ones are most critical. Simulation laboratories to be used for training are a high priority and could be used in rural areas very well, where we don't always have the lab space and where it's with hospitals having less patients, it becomes more difficult to get an increased number of students through the training, the clinical training, and the simulation laboratories will provide opportunities to start that process. It assists with the development and implementation of the statewide educational curriculum for registered nurses. It's a process for sharing of health care and education in this very time-sensitive period. And it really promotes the sharing of resources. And I think that without this kind of structure for the coordination of that, we find a lot of resources not efficiently used. So the intent is to address the critical shortage, to expand the number of nurses in the system and growing, and to share resources. And that is not just money, but it's also opportunities. And I know that at Blue Mountain Community Colleges, one of the shortfalls in the early part of this was that there are a lot of qualified students out there, but there wasn't enough room in anatomy and physiology classes. They didn't have the instructor or the time and money to do that. Well, now, through distance learning and this process, we can determine where those needs are and share the resources among the colleges and universities. And hopefully do a much more efficient job of meeting the crisis.
Thank you. I want to ask you the same question that I asked Representative Mona Sanderson relating to the lack of our ability to put general fund into the program. Do you think that is going to make this an impossible undertaking, or do you see that there is a reason to go ahead with this even without general fund involved in it?
I think it's very critical that we go forward with this because communities of interest are stepping up to the plate. People are going out and writing grants and partnerships are being formed. And I think that in order to spread those resources and those opportunities statewide, we need to have this process whereby the groups can get together and determine who needs what and then provide it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Bates.
Representative Mons Anderson, do you see this as a way to enhance your ability to get federal grants and other grants from community members?
I definitely think so. If you receive a grant that says the state of Oregon has the infrastructure that is going to address all areas of the state, it will be highly, much more competitive. It's extremely expensive right now to train a nurse. In fact, in the laboratory, you have to have one instructor for every 8 nurses in the clinical setting. If there are coordinated efforts for, say, simulation labs or distance learning in which the various training programs can share resources, this is critical, and this body will be much more adept at figuring out where the needs are in the state of Oregon. And yes, it will make it much more competitive. We will be much more competitive.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you both, and thank you for your testimony. I would just like you to know that this committee has heard a great deal of testimony about the critical nursing shortage in our state. We've heard testimony from the Board of Nursing, from the Oregon Health Sciences University, from the Health Division, through the Office of Multicultural Health, and others. So I believe we've received a great deal of information that helps us really understand the proposal that's in front of us. With that said, I was troubled to hear in the presentation from Mr. Bender that there's a question about providing a dollar in general fund for this bill. And I would just say, for the record, Madam Chair, that if we can find millions for the vet school and other projects, surely we can find a dollar for this particular proposal. And not to do so would make absolutely no sense. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there questions or comments from the committee? Thank you very much.
And just one comment. We have to remember that there will be money coming, should be money coming, through the Workforce Investment Act. And we've already sent a letter to, the legislature has sent a letter to the governor saying that it is critical for them, for him to look at and make sure that some of that workforce investment money is channeled into meeting the critical shortage, healthcare personnel shortage in the state.
The I don't know if this is a question that's best directed at you or perhaps at Oregon Health Science University, but there are going to be some administrative costs related to bringing these people together and just making things happen, notifications and coordination and things like that. How are you proposing to cover those costs?
I would like OHSU to maybe address that issue. They are going to be the fiscal agent, and
they are here.
We have you on the sign-up sheet, so I'd be very glad to raise that issue again when you're.
But we do not want. We had talked as a group. We do not want to see the administration of this be from DAS or from the state legislature.
Thank you,
Representative Morgan, and members of the committee. That is laid out in the bill, how that will be dealt with.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions or comments? Thank you very much, Representative Mona Sanderson, Ms. Nelson.
Thank you.
For being here today. And I will call Brian DeLashmit and Joe Bell.
For the record, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Brian DeLashmit. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. I also have the blessing to speak on behalf of the ONLC. And I'll start my presentation.
Okay. We'll make sure they get that.
I hope that the co-chairs of Ways and Means spend that dollar well. I think I have a suggestion of where they can spend it. Let me just give you a little history and then go on. I don't recall that any of the faces that are sitting in front of me on this panel were here in the early 1980s.
If I might just interrupt, Representative Bates, this has a wonderful idea, and we will consider this to be the first grant that's received.
I'm assuming the co-chairs are willing to accept grants in this program.
That's a dangerous assumption.
I won't go there. Just a little history. In looking at the members of the legislature, I don't recall that any of you were here in the early 1980s, but I find myself kind of as a historian, and some of you have heard me talk a little bit about this in the past, but my first session was in 1977, and then obviously, you know, the economic downturn of the early 80s, and going through the three special sessions then, we made some very dramatic decisions as legislators at that point. That have impacted us into the 2000s and will be impacting us in the next 10 to 20 years. And one of those decisions that was made was that across-the-board cuts in education and including at the Health Science University nursing education, and my recollection of the discussions that occurred at that point were that at the Oregon Health Science University, they were approximately 200 VSN students per class entering those programs at that time. And because of the cuts of the 1980s, they were reduced in half. Well, that's one of the reasons why we're in the situation we're in right now in this state. This is just one avenue. I don't want to exclude the community colleges, and I assume that community colleges made relative cuts based upon the dollars that they received from the state. But you've all seen the numbers. We are, by 2005, I think the numbers are somewhere between 3 and 4,000 RNs short in the state. And by 2010, anywhere from about 8 to 10,000 RNs short in the state. What is that as a percentage of the overall makeup of RNs in the state? By 2010, we're talking roughly 20 to 25%. This is a pretty dramatic number. So what we attempted to do, and with the assistance, and I would like to thank Representative Monis Anderson and Senator Dave Nelson and also Allison Nelson, who has been a prime mover on this, we have put together all of the parties that have an interest in this, and I would say all the parties, not all the parties, because the public definitely has an interest in this, and this is why it's in front of you as a body. But all of those that either provide services, are heavily involved in both state and federal legislation, grants, so forth, and sat down at the table and said, what is the best way to get the best bang for our buck? And with that, recognizing that there are extremely limited dollars, maybe a dollar in this state, are there opportunities that we can bring everybody together, we can figure out what the base structure needs to be in this state, to be able to actually increase our output at a time when the economy is down and our state funding for these programs is going to be down. And we believe we've accomplished that. In answer to the earlier questions, if there's no additional dollars besides the dollar, do we need this? Yes. There are programs out there. You heard about Blue Mountain. There's also programs out there in which individual hospitals are funding or assisting specific nursing programs in this state, and the trade-off, of course, is that then the stream of nurses from that program then go into that specific hospital. While that's all well and good, and we very much appreciate that, is that looking at as a statewide need? Is there some way in which we can maximize those dollars? If we had the $1 million that this one program is feeding into the program, and potentially could match it with some federal dollars. This is the first million is coming from a private entity, not from the state. We can match that with, let's say, another million or 2 million from the federal government if the programs are up and running there that we believe will be happening in the future. Then we could, in fact, supply that money into the overall system and do a lot of good in the state. So there is a need for this structure. And this structure was reached after a series of meetings by all the participants. You know, historically, there is some jealousies between different programs. We were all at the table. We've worked this out, and you will hear, me too, we love it today. But, you know, in my 20-some years in this building, we've come a long ways in nursing education. Everybody was very protective of their own individual programs. We're now looking at a statewide system, and I think this is a major, major step to getting us there. One additional point that I would make is this really is, and the point actually was touched on, I believe, by Alice Nelson, this is economic development. We have a shortage right now. We have the jobs there. If we had people in those jobs, they would be generating income that would be paying income taxes that would help us. We just don't have capacity. So if you want to look at anything in this state that would help rev up income tax, I tell you, I'd not only double, but I'd triple the enrollment in the nursing education programs right now and get them going as quick as possible, because there's jobs to be had and there's money to be generated. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions, Representative Smith.
Mr. DeLashman, thank you for coming. Now, did you say in the year 2010 there would be a shortage of nurses in Oregon of 8 to 10,000? What's your source of information for that?
Actually, it's a study that was done, and there are nursing experts here, but it was a study done that I think actually the center was at OHSU. But it was an individual professor that did that study, and we've seen no indication that there's been anything that's changed since that study. And the study was done about 2 years ago.
Yeah, but there's more recent studies.
More recent studies, so there's the experts to follow.
Okay, maybe they can just highlight on that a little bit. Thank you.
Further questions or comments for Mr. DeLashman? Thank you very much. Ms. Bell.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jill Bell, and I'm with the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And I want to mention, first of all, that you have received written testimony both from myself and also from Nancy Connell, who is the Vice President of Patient Care for Bay Area Hospital in Coos Bay, and she's also President-elect for the Northwest Organization of Nurse Executives. And that sort of lead into the fact that she is the representative for the nurse executives from hospitals on the Oregon Nursing Leadership Council, and you've heard ONLC mentioned, and I would like to take this opportunity to commend them. Basically, it's an organization of nursing interests. It includes the nurse executives, includes the community college deans of the nursing programs, OHSU nursing programs, ONA, and other nursing interests in the state. And when they discovered or realized how critical the shortage was going to be about 3 or 4 years ago, they put together on a totally volunteer basis. They got together and worked on issues that were coming up and came up with a report with 5 goals. And if you don't have that report, I'll be happy to get that for you because I think that's real important. And one of their goals was to double the enrollment in nursing programs by 2004. And since that time, there's been an incredible amount, as you've heard, of collaboration. From the hospital standpoint, the reason we are very interested in this bill is that on the local level, there are a lot of collaborations between the community colleges, OHSU, private colleges, with a lot of individual hospitals out there. And our hospital members are spending a great deal of their resources to assist in either financially or in kind with these programs. And it's our feeling that that is very good, but we need some sort of a statewide system or function to use those, to build on those funds and to have a central place where all of the activities and efforts are being sort of watched, and then if there's an ability to bring all of the people together who are doing the different things around the state and apply for grants, that can then the information can be spread statewide, then we're not recreating the wheel in every different location in the state. And so we think that this is a very good vehicle for doing that. The other thing that Brian touched on, several years ago we did a survey, actually about a year and a half ago now, we did a survey of just 11 positions within hospitals. And if we could fill all of those positions in 11 positions in 30 various hospitals, the total gross revenue income for the total gross salaries for those positions is going to be over $76 million. And if you double that, because there are 62 hospitals in the state, you're looking at more like $153 million in salaries that could provide some economic stimulus to the state of Oregon. So his comments about the fact that this is an economic development issue are very true. Hospitals are already there. They're not industries that you have to recruit, and they are needing not just nursing but other employees. So that we feel that anything that we can do to get students in the pipeline and moving through the system will be very beneficial, not just to the healthcare industry but to the state as a whole. And beyond that, if you have any questions, I would be happy to respond.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I will call from Mount Hood Community College, Paula Gubrid and Bob Silverman.
Could I, if I had the chance, could I double the allocation? Let's make it two. Okay?
Well, just because we are on the public record here, we should make note that we actually have no way of getting this into the state's fiscal system, and we will be returning these symbolic donations.
Okay, but I will get it to you somewhere.
Thinking that we can take that.
Well, Madam Chair, the LFO is noting this behavior, and we're going to ask that every bill that for which there's no funding.
That's the norm.
Well, I don't want this to be perceived as trying to buy a bill, but mm-hmm. I do want you to have some money to fund the bill.
Thank you.
We could walk over to the treasurer's office.
I will walk it over personally. If that's where it goes.
Please proceed.
Oh, I guess I get to go first.
I already caused a stir. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Silverman, president of Mount Hood Community College, and I sure appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you today. This bill that you are considering is absolutely critical to the colleges, to the nursing profession, in my opinion. We have an opportunity with this bill to set up an infrastructure of cooperation and collaboration that has not been seen in this state ever, where OHSU, community colleges, other providers of nursing training will be encouraged, and we will work together to go out and find the money. And when we talk about administrative overhead, as a college president, I'll tell you that I have committed already a half-time position just to grant writing and raising funds. This support that we're asking for with this bill will allow us to take that time that we're contributing from the community colleges in grant writing and be able to get more power behind our grant writing. The collaboration is a will be a national model where you have a major university working with all the community colleges potentially to form a pipeline of effective nursing training. So I would sure encourage you to support this bill. And as I said, I will even put my money where my mouth is. So we are here to help the state and work with you cooperatively and contribute whatever we can to make it work. So thank you.
Questions or comments for Mr. Silverman?
Thank you. Chair Morgan and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. I'm Paula Gubrud Howe, and I'm the nursing program director at Mount Hood Community College. I've also been on the ONLC and helped develop the strategic plan, and probably most importantly for today's testimony, I'm the co-chair of the Oregon Nursing Education Consortium. So Dr. Christine Tanner from OHSU, who is not able to be here today, and I co-chair the committee that is working on creating the consortium, statewide consortium for nursing education. I think I can answer some of your questions that you've had previously. The consortium involves nursing education programs throughout the state. We're working together informally without any funding to create a statewide curriculum whereby we can share the resources you heard about earlier, the simulation labs, the shared clinical placements, and probably most importantly, faculty. Through distance learning, we can use faculty from all around the state to help each other educate nurses. One of the biggest challenges of the shortage is the lack of faculty. When we look at the shortage, the qualified faculty are really critical, and we know we're going to have huge retirements and are going to have to be more efficient about how we use our faculty. Through the consortium, we have engaged in two aggressive grant issues over the last 3 months. Now, this is an informal organization in that we don't have infrastructure to collaborate formally, but we do it over email and phones and lots of meetings. Together, we applied for federal grant funds through the Nursery Investment Act. Members took different pieces of our consortium plan and applied separately. What we're proposing here in this bill would allow us to more easily coordinate those efforts and not have to duplicate services. Writing grants is an expensive endeavor, too, and takes us away from our other work. We also have applied for funding through Northwest Health Foundation, and we'll hear about that in about the next month. And, again, we coordinated efforts to create the simulation labs and so on together. This bill, again, is very important for two important reasons. It increases the capacity, and you've already heard the numbers. We have to do it. If we do not increase capacity in Oregon's nursing programs, we'll have a public health crisis on our hands. And it creates economic development for the state. When I calculate what doubling enrollment would mean for East County, where I reside and work, doubling enrollment would bring $2 million more dollars a year into my community, which would be nice for East County since we have a significant unemployment situation. So I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Ms. Flaherty-Robb,
yes.
Please take it away.
All right. Good morning. I'm Marna Flaherty-Robb, Associate Dean of the School of Nursing at Oregon Health and Sciences University, and I'm pleased to be here to testify in support of this bill. You have heard in past sessions, some of you the reports through the Northwest Health Foundation report on the public health crisis in the making and the shortage of nursing, the confluence of a perfect storm, and that is the increase of health needs in our population in Oregon is the exact trajectory of the loss of RN capacity in our state. We have students in queue waiting to get in. The rate-limiting step is the capacity to socialize, educate, and put them in the workforce. Brian's comments about what the numbers are accurate. It's at least 4,000 by that next four to 10-year trajectory and many more after that in loss of capacity of nurses to the known need. And that's just based on replacing the workforce, the currently working, not even an enrichment of the workforce based on the increased needs of chronic illness behavior, the increased needs of family caregiving, and the complexity of the disabled now living many more years than prior decades. So what was very important to this coalition of interested parties, and we have, as has been suggested by prior speakers, we are all here saying me too. We have a shared set of values about how to serve our public who are asking us to be responsible and conscious to the needs they have expressed. We have a shared set of goals between health systems, operations, and all levels of education and community resources and the health division. This shared set of goals has been put into the five-pronged Oregon Nursing Leadership Strategic Plan. We have shared goals for competency-based education, changes in the condition in the workplace in which nurses are, all those that are there will stay, which is not a small piece of the issue. Joint partnerships between health systems, Oregon Hospital Association, consumer groups, AARP, Elders in Action, around the issues of what do nurses need to know. Shared understanding of we can only do this through distance education, simulation labs, as NASA has demonstrated for at least two decades, for how to rehearse for high-risk, high-cost issues to keep our patients safe. We have a unified set of objectives to go to competency-based education. That means you demonstrate skill as a part of the work and the knowing. This next piece that we're asking for, and when we have money, we would hope it would go in to the fund. We recognize that Oregon has been struggling with scarcity of resources and a variety of high-level A needs for a long time. We accept the fact that we would have a couple of dollars in the fund, and when opportunity would come, there would be more. This structure is the way we want to work together to collaborate formally to make investment decisions in the areas of the strategic plan that we have pre-agreed to, with a set of decision rules, a set of criteria, and a set of trust-filled relationships that will allow us to do this better and better and better. And to seek synergy, it already is happening. We do want to say, though, that as Paula suggests, writing grants and getting matching funds and telling our story and getting people to understand and see our need is not cheap. And we've been doing 20% above our normal day job for 3 years now because we care and it's passionate work that we are doing. But we hope you will set up in this structure that we've designed very carefully so that people fear it will be a fair and equitable process to distribute the funds to the interested parties. And as Paula suggests this morning, we are part of a grants review process with Northwest Health Foundation to compete for $1.2 million in funds every year for the next 5 years. And I'll give you a quote from Becky Rice last night. She's the head of Robert Wood Johnson's colleagues in Caring, who has worked 8 years on a very similar process in states using $15 million. And she has said, Oregon, in a written testimony, has said that Oregon has gone farther in 3 years under volunteer labor than they have done in 8 with lots of money. So I would say to you that we really need your vote of support. We need the structure for decision making and support, and we would hope that when you have opportunity, there would be more dollars, and this structure will allow us to go for more federal and matching funds from grantors. Thanks so much.
Just to clarify and to continue the question that I asked earlier, it appears that the administrative function for this, if the bill is enacted, will fall to OHSU. Can you talk to the committee and get on the record how the Health Sciences University will deal with the cost of that?
Well, as I suggested earlier, we do not have discretionary funds to currently absorb all of this. We will continue to do what we think is our in-kind dedication of our work life, of organizing our work to try to do as much as we can to both attend the meetings, help coordinate with our partners the agenda of the meetings, but that's the job of the structure, and to be part of the fiscal authority for the dollars distribution within the structure of decisions of the committee. But I want to be clear also that we don't have a lot of discretionary funds to sustain this. We just don't. We think that that's why we want some dollars in the pot and need some dollars in the pot, because we are, as Paula suggests, just designing our work life to try to do as much as we can.
But again, just to clarify, given that we will not be putting general fund dollars in the pot, could you give us some clarification on how the administrative side of this will be paid for?
Well, I can tell you that to the extent to which the members of the ONLC will continue to be part of this coalition, some of the members from OHSU, the members sought into this next coalition structure, we will dedicate our in-kind time to do this for now.
Thank you. Representative Smith, did you have a question?
Just a quick follow-up. We talk a lot about the nursing program. The nursing shortages in this state. There are many reasons for those.
Yes.
One of which is, I think, working conditions. And this week there was a strike, a one-day strike at a local hospital to try to bring light on that. I've asked this question many times before in my other subcommittee about that, and every time it's swept under the rug because nobody wants to acknowledge it or deal with it. And I think until the legislature can only do so much with this, but until working conditions are improved and we try to alleviate and help some of the burnout of our nurses, I think we're always going to have a nursing shortage. Would you like to address that?
I can say my position on this and also my experience. I've been in operations and working environments for nursing for 35 years this year. I think the ONLC has demonstrated its shared understanding of those dilemmas, from decision authority to autonomy to respect to workload to distribution of workload, decisions in areas of interest to nurses, how to educate and socialize within the work environment itself, how to create trust-filled environments rather than rancor environments. And I think the ONLC is very aware of these issues and has several efforts going on, including as you saw in the report previously, having not just one magnet hospital, which St. Vincent's is in the state, but a magnet state, so that nurses, because they see the efforts that education and health systems are doing together, they will see it as attractive.
Oh, well,
now, are we perfect at this time? I don't think so. Are we working towards shared goals to treat those environmental issues? I believe we are and will continue to.
You answered my question the same way it always gets answered. We're working on those issues.
Uh-huh.
When you expect nurses to work 12-hour shifts every day with little time off, not you, but the hospitals and the members who hire them, that is the issue, 12-hour shifts with few breaks in between. And until that particular issue, and I say this to everybody in the room,
mm-hmm.
and until that particular issue is addressed, don't expect the legislature to come in and save the day, because it's not going to happen. That's just my point of view.
I hear your position.
Okay.
Representative
Marsh. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Marna, if you don't mind me calling you by that name, since my sister's name is Marna, I have a familiarity with that. To follow up on the Chair's question, would some of the federal and or private grants provide a certain amount of money for administration so that some of the administrative costs could be covered out of the grant funding?
It is our hope in almost every budget, and Paula can speak to the one grant you wrote. I have been involved in two.
Well, historically, when you write a grant, 8 to 15% of the grant goes to administrative costs. So generally, that's how the administration of the grants managed. And the grants we've submitted so far, one includes some support for the administration of the coalition.
Okay.
And we feel pretty confident that we'll get some of what we've asked for anyway.
And it's all written in detail with a portion of the administrative issues of in the Northwest Health Foundation grant as well. So your point is really well taken.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification, Representative March, because it's my intention to get onto the public record that the program can be successful in covering the administrative costs without a general fund infusion.
All right.
And that brings me to the end of my sign-up sheet. So if there are no further questions, Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm struggling over here trying to form my question, I guess, or my concern. An ill feeling I have, maybe it's another word. As I read through this bill, and I apologize for not becoming better aware of the issues with this bill prior to this meeting, there's a tremendous amount of work for this committee to do, and they're making some very serious basic decisions. And I'm concerned, or I just don't feel totally comfortable, I guess, that they are making these decisions themselves. They are not an advisory committee back to whoever, OHSU or whoever is going to be receiving these funds, but they are making the decisions themselves. And I guess at some point I would like to have more discussion about this type of a structure. It seems a little odd to me that we're setting up a whole new commission, basically, with the authority to not only the criteria, which all of this information is good, mm-hmm. and it's important, and I certainly understand the need to train and get more nursing personnel out on the job. But I'm having a little trouble expressing exactly my ill feelings, I guess. It just seems like we're setting up a new type of oversight who has very little oversight to where the funds are coming from. So I'm open. I'm not trying to throw a roadblock in the whole process here, but I think it warrants more discussion.
Senator Messerly, we have a time issue here in that we have another bill on the agenda and an hour left in the time that we have allotted. But what I would ask Mr. Bender to do is to note the issue that you've raised, and when we come bring the bill back, we can continue the discussion on that issue. And perhaps in the meantime, it would be advantageous for Senator Messerly to receive the information that he's requesting.
Sure.
And with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3603 and Senate Bill 800 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2302. And Mr. Bender, do you wish to give us any opening comments on this bill?
Madam Chair, the information on this bill is in the pile of materials with the orange description on top. House Bill 2302 would create the Oregon Employer Workforce Training Fund to provide resources to Oregon businesses for workplace training. This fund would be administered by the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, which you may remember is the state agency that administers the Workforce Investment Act funds in Oregon. The bill would authorize the state education and workforce policy advisor to adopt criteria for the use of and to approve the use of monies in this new fund. The bill establishes workforce response teams in each regional workforce area to administer funds distributed or to administer monies distributed from this fund. And it establishes criteria for funding projects. One of those is a requirement that a business or association that receives funding under this proposal match the funding with 50 cents for each dollar that they receive. There are a number of provisions here there are some amendments or further changes to the A.N. Gross bill that proponents are asking you to consider. I know you're only in public hearing today, so I will leave the rest of the discussion and description to the people who are testifying unless there are specific questions.
Thank you. I have first on my agenda here to call Mr. Nesbitt forward and Ms. Brandis. I think you're a solo act.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and also here in my capacity as co-chair of the governor's task force on workforce development with Matt Hennessy, who unfortunately couldn't be here today. So I'm speaking for both myself and Mr. Hennessy in support of House Bill 2302. But just to kind of lay the groundwork very quickly, you know, this when we talk about workforce development, we're talking about our ability to compete successfully in a very competitive national and global economy. And I think there are two key points to make in that regard. First, by offering to employers a well-educated and highly skilled and adaptable workforce with proficient and productive workers, we'll be able to compete most effectively to attract and sustain good jobs. Secondly, we also compete with other states in how we all manage, because all states receive these funds, how we all manage the use of federal funds for workforce training and how we enhance our ability to do that with local effort and local resources. And our task force found that on both counts, we can be doing better. We can be doing better in how we focus our workforce training efforts to train the workforce for the jobs of the future, and in how we compete with other states for using our the federal dollars we receive most effectively. The findings in our report highlight a fragmentation of services, a lack of coordination, a lack of focus on connecting workforce development strategies with economic development strategies, in other words, training workers for where the good jobs are, and also not enough focus on and connection to current workers and the need for job retention. The bottom line is we need the kind of focus and funding that House Bill 2302 provides, and at this point there'll be a lot more specific testimony in support of the bill, but at this point I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Brandis.
Thank you. Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Julie Brandis, representing Associated Oregon Industries. We participated in this workforce task force, and in doing so, we needed a little bit more information from our membership about what they knew about workforce training programs in the state. And I'm sure it is of no surprise, it certainly wasn't to us, but maybe the depth of or the lack of the level of lack of understanding, if that's such a term. But we surveyed our members informally, and what we found out is that many of our members did not know where to go or what to do when they had workforce training problems. Some of them had had great experiences with the community college, and it seemed, based on our survey, that if a member had had a positive experience with one workforce training program, then they were able to continue that relationship on. And some had had good luck with the Jobs Plus program, but really what we found out is many of our members just didn't know where to go when this need occurred. So what we decided from reviewing the surveys is that Oregon really did have sort of this fragmented workforce training system. There wasn't a one-stop shopping where a member could go to find out where good programs existed or a program that might fit their needs. There is also, you know, a great deal of federal dollars that fund workforce training programs in the state. So there's almost the silo effect where you have, if you need this type of training or if you're involved with this type of program, you can go here or over here. But again, there's no one necessarily or no state agency that can a AOI member could go to, or any business for that matter, to help them figure out which training program is best. And we did have a lot of members who had never even utilized a workforce training program, and I think that's probably reflective of them not knowing that had occurred. So this is why we got so involved with this workforce training program. And I think the final issue, it really comes down to the economy. And as we struggled with our members during the first part of this recession or this downturn, one of the things that we noticed is when they shared with us how they might be recruited by other states or maybe to develop their sites in other states. And I think that's really important to take note of when you're looking at economic development issues. Many of our members can manufacture a widget here in Oregon, or they can manufacture it in Georgia, or they can manufacture it wherever they might have another site. It just means picking up the product and actually moving it. And when we looked at how they were sort of tempted by other states, workforce training programs were one of the key areas that other states had used. So Georgia uses it significantly as a tool. So again, that's why our members said this is an area that would really help us and with the economy in the long term.
Thank you. Questions or comments for Mr. Nesbitt or Ms. Brandes?
A question, Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much. If Ms. Brandes, could you provide a bit more information about the informal survey? What was the tool used for the survey? How many businesses responded? Just to get a great breadth of...
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, that's a good question because I wouldn't call it a statistically significant survey. What we did is we surveyed the human resource directors of about probably 200 of our companies, member companies, large, small, all sorts of different groups. And or different companies, pardon me, and we probably got about a 15% return on that, so very, very low. But when I have my master's degree in statistical survey, and what I would say is that's an indication of how to develop a better tool if we had needed to.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Is there a report available to the committee from that survey?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, since it was such an informal survey, I just collected the emails and stuck them in the file, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will call Margaret Hallett and Cheryl Heinerman.
Thank you. I'm going to sit here. Members of the committee, I'm Margaret Hallock. I'm the governor's advisor for revenue, labor, and workforce development. And he has asked me to try to help implement the findings of the task force that was chaired by Mr. Nesbitt and Mr. Hennessy. And,
we're just going into our Starship Enterprise.
Yeah. Well, I thought that I would give a very brief overview of the task force findings and the Workforce Investment Act structure as it exists in order to introduce the provisions of House Bill 2302. And with me this morning is Cheryl Heinerman, who of Intel Corporation. And Cheryl is a member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. She is a... agreed to co-chair the subcommittee of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, which would implement this fund that we seek in this legislation. Her co-chair in that endeavor will be Gretchen Schutte, who's the president of Chemeketa Community College. So, Cher, thank you for being here, and she'll follow my remarks very briefly. I thought it would be useful, though, to give a brief overview of the task force findings and the Workforce Investment Act. This is a federal act that sends federal dollars under a number of titles to the state of Oregon, and this is in your packet that I just handed out. And get someone focused, help focus this. I don't expect that you're interested in the detail in this chart. I just wanted to show that there are millions of dollars that come to the state of Oregon and that these are used for a variety of workforce development activities. We are primarily concerned with the strand of funding on the left side, which is Title I of the Workforce Investment Act. Oregon receives in the $54 to $57 million range per year funds to assist in investing in the workforce. That's for adults, youth, and dislocated workers. This fund is distributed for the most part to local workforce investment boards. There are 7 local workforce investment boards in the state, one of which also oversees 8 additional regions. So there are 15 total different workforce development regional boards and that operate with these funds. A good deal of the effort under the Workforce Investment Act, which was, by the way, was the sequel to the Job Training Partnership Act, which was a sequel to CETA. So CETA, JTPA, and then WIA, as it's called, the Workforce Investment Act. A good deal of activities has developed a very impressive set of one-stop centers for work development, and that these centers are designed to be universally open to individuals who are seeking job training assistance and or job preparation and job search assistance. Also available to businesses and for job listings, because the Oregon Department of Employment Department is one of the key partners. But we have found that while this activity is extremely important and it has been quite impressive, there is a major gap in the use of the workforce dollars in the state of Oregon, and that is that we don't have insufficient funds available for actual training of workers, that we can assist workers with many services and the like, but we don't have a sufficient amount of resources dedicated to upgrading the skills of the workforce, responding to businesses and their need, and to labor organizations and their need for training the current workforce. On the very bottom left hand, you see the statewide incumbent worker grants. That's a fund of $2 million that's been part of the state strategy. And our proposal today is to expand this significantly so that we can be more responsive to the needs of businesses for rapid response, for job retention, and to better connect training to the engines of economic development and economic growth in our state. On the right-hand side of this chart, you can see we added the regional investment program that operates through the lottery and from the Economic Development Department. In too many areas, these are separate activities that are not connected to each other. The training of the current workforce and the economic development activities in the Economic Development Department at the state level and at the local level. And our proposal is to try to connect those to make workforce development a critical part of the economic development strategy of the state. It's our belief that a skilled workforce is absolutely central to a prosperous economy.
Ms. Hallett,
yes.
If I could interject, mm-hmm. Is the only funding that, I guess the question here is this a redirection of federal funds, or are there other revenue streams coming into the program?
Yes, Madam Chair, the proposal for the employer workforce training fund that we would like to develop includes a redirection of federal dollars to enhance this incumbent worker grant program.
And is it all of the federal dollars that you're redirecting?
No, we would propose to increase the amount going to current worker training from $2 million to $4 million per year. I mean, to add $4 million per year. So it would increase it from $2 to $6.
I'm sorry. Where would you take the $2 million from?
The $2 million already exists in the statewide incumbent worker grants. It's already part of the state withholding of federal dollars for current worker training. And we propose to add $4 million of the federal funds to that pot to increase it to $6 million per year for meeting the current needs of workers and businesses for skill enhancement.
Okay.
So it's a redirection of $4 million of the $55 million on the left-hand side of that chart.
Then the clarification that I would seek here is if you are going to take $4 million that's currently going somewhere and redirect it into the statewide incumbent worker right. grants, which is, I believe you hear you saying, who isn't going to get that $4 million that's getting it now?
And we will get there. It's the regional and local workforce investment boards, as well as other statewide activities that we will shift to this new activity.
Okay.
We have the support of the regional and workforce investment community, who will be here to testify to this. And one reason I think that there is a consensus around this is that it's been a universal need that's been cited by the state board as well as the regional boards, that the federal funding dollars that flow to the local areas through the formula for distribution is not flexible enough to meet the needs of business, that it after the individual worker needs are met, that there isn't sufficient funds for training and upgrading the skills of the workforce. This diversion and reallocation to the regional areas would actually increase the amount of flexibility in the use of those funds.
Okay, and let me interrupt one more time. So is the additional $4 million that's coming from the regional and local workforce investment boards the only additional revenue that's flowing into this, or are there other revenue streams?
And our additional proposal, in addition to the Workforce Investment Act, the proposal is to seek $2 million of the CDAF administrative funds from the Employment Department and $4 million.
And may I just ask some backup questions on CDAF money? The $2 million that you propose to take out, is that for the biennium or for each year?
That's for each year of the biennium,
okay.
I believe.
And do you propose that to be ongoing, or is this a one-time?
This is for a that's for the biennium.
Okay. And do you
We planned this slightly later, but this is fine to get the clarification for this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Debbie Lincoln. I'm the director of the Employment Department.
Welcome. The CDAF money that's coming in, $2 million a biennium, is that projected to be ongoing, or is that a one-time disbursement of funds from CDAF?
Madam Chair, we hope it's ongoing. We are on a biennium-to-biennium projection of those CDAF funds. They are dropping because they're based entirely on interest. But the proposal right now is that that $2 million would be ongoing.
Okay, and then, Ms. Halleck, if I might get back to my base question, besides CDAF and the Workforce Investment Board money, are there other revenue streams?
Yes, the other proposal is to divert $4 million from the Jobs Plus program, which is a projected unspent, if the program operates at its current level in the unemployment insurance claimant area. There's $28 million in that fund. There's projected to be $4 million that would be in surplus. And we, the task force, recommended this, talked to the Jobs Plus Council, and the proposal that's in front of you, the amendments would permit the transfer of $4 million to this fund from that fund as well.
And would this also be an ongoing disbursement from the fund?
Madam Chair, no, that would be a one-time disbursement.
Thank
the fund sunsets at the end of next biennium, so we'll have to take a look at what possible ending balance may be left at that point.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark, we had the same conversation yesterday, and I felt pretty well assured that all parties that bought off this local organizations felt comfortable with money going into a statewide fund for more flexibility. Also, remember there was an upper limit on this by federal law that you couldn't go above, I think, 10% of the total fund dollars or something of that nature. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, the proposal is to create a statewide reserve, which most of which would then be allocated to the regional areas. So, yes, I think we do have consensus that that's a useful and productive feature. There are restrictions to how much can be withheld at the state level, and 5% for administration, but the total amount is 15%, 10 to 15%, depending on the exact title and sub-area that it comes under.
Well, if you have the ability to withhold 10 or 15% is from the Title I money, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so that's 10 or 15% of $57 million?
That's correct.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The other question I was going to ask yesterday, and you were going to research for me, was whether the co-chair's budget anticipates $4 million being moved from the Jobs Plus program into this program. You didn't know the answer yesterday, but possibly you do now.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I did try to find the answer to that question along with your staff, and we were unable to determine that precisely. It has been on balance lists previously. It is my understanding it is currently not intended to be part of the balance, but I don't have that category. I don't have the answer to that categorically.
I believe Mr. Bender has some clarification on that issue.
Yeah, I do believe, actually, that both the CDAP funds and the Job Plus funds are under consideration to help for the with the general fund budget balance and would not be in the co-chair's budget for this purpose.
Madam Chair, I would respectfully ask that the committee, and I will discuss this with the co-chairs, but it seems to me that these funds are would be extremely useful to have them remain in the general area for which they're originally intended, which is worker training and helping people find jobs, retain jobs through skill upgrades and education and training and employment services. And that's what this proposal does. It has wide consensus from the business community and the workforce development community.
And let me assure you, Ms. Halleck, that one of the purposes of this hearing is to surface just those issues, because those are the policy issues that will have to be debated in the body.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I would just add that in the consultation that takes place with the co-chairs around this issue of the $4 million, that consultation also includes the chair of the Human Services Subcommittee, the subject of the Jobs Plus program and the surplus, the $4 million surplus, has also been raised in that subcommittee.
Okay.
In terms of how the questions around why is there a surplus, and then also how to make that surplus more accessible to clients who are in the remaining Jobs Plus program. That's my recollection of the discussion that we've had in that subcommittee. Representative Bates serves on that committee as well, and may have additional comments in that regard.
If I might just interject, I think that those of us that have been here through the interim and the special sessions and then through the budget building exercise that we're still involved in as we attempt to build this budget are very aware of the fact that there is no pot of money that has gone unexamined in this process. And both the CDAF money and the Jobs Plus money have been and are continuing to be looked at from a number of different perspectives. The purpose of the conversation that we're having here today is to shine some light on one of those perspectives.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Madam Chair, can I offer a little more than what's been said already? This was an issue for me yesterday. It needs to be one because I see a conflict developing potentially here with this bill. The Title I money being redirected is appropriate and no question, but CDAF money and the Jobs Plus money has been discussed in other committees, and everyone sort of looks at that and starts to salivate. And I'm not sure that we have consensus amongst various committees in the body of where that money should go. And I would not want to leave you with the impression that I'm buying off on this committee and then saying no on the next committee. So we want to get out in the open, make it clear, and have a discussion about where that money should go.
And with that, we have hopelessly derailed you from your presentation. So if you'd like to get the train back on the track, we'll continue.
Okay, I'll make it quite shorten it considerably, I think. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to reiterate the findings of the task force, which have informed the work that we've done to date, and that is that there is some fragmentation in the workforce system, that the training needs to be more connected to economic development, that there are critical skill needs, and you heard of one this morning, in the healthcare industries, that we're simply not addressing in a sufficient fashion. And very importantly, Oregon lags far behind other states in the amount of federal and state dollars that are invested in training. We surveyed 32 states and found funds very similar to the proposal for the Oregon Employer Workforce Training Fund. And most of those funds are in the neighborhood of $10 million to $32 million, and they operate very much like this one would be proposed to operate, which would be a flexible source to meet the ongoing and emerging needs of Oregon businesses to for skill enhancement for the jobs of the future. California, to our south, of course, much larger than Oregon, their fund is $100 million. But Idaho, quite smaller than Oregon, has a $10 million fund. So we believe that it is critical for Oregon to develop the capacity for rapid response and training and worker training. So our action plan is to link at a policy level economic development and workforce development, and working very closely with the Economic Development Department to make workforce more a more central part of Oregon's economic development strategy. Secondly, we want to streamline and coordinate the staff at the state and the regional levels. And this proposal would hopefully cause that to happen at the state and local level. And finally, the workforce training fund that's in House Bill 2302. One of the key findings that Mr. Nesbitt and Julie Brandeis highlighted was that employers sometimes don't know where to go for information about economic development and training. Many have had excellent and wonderful experiences with the local boards. Others find the system more inaccessible and have questions about where to go. We hope to create at each regional, in each region, a regional response team which includes staff and participants from business, economic development, and workforce development. These teams already exist in many regions, and where they exist, we have no intention of duplicating or adding, but sort of saying way to go and move forward. So, for example, in Marion, Polk, Yamhill, the Workforce Investment Network, they call them the WIN teams. In Southern Oregon, it's the business response teams that work with the Job Council and So Ready, and they call it the BRT. So these are already exist in many areas where economic development and workforce development partnerships are in touch with the local economy and responding to the needs of the local economy. It is these kinds of teams that we want to get together, identify a fiscal agent, probably the workforce board, but not necessarily, to administer the funds that would be received at the regional level from this proposal. We also want to provide more coordinated information and a single point of contact for firms and for workers. So we will, we're developing a single portal that will connect the economic development and workforce development websites together, and developing a proposal for to use the state 311 telephone line for economic and workforce development questions. And that's being piloted right now in Representative Bates' region in Medford at the employment department there. It's very exciting. It's a very huge project. It is a pilot, and so we're trying to learn from that pilot before we move it statewide. In your packet, this answers quite a few of the questions I think that you had about the structure of the fund and the sources of the fund. The basic idea is to, under the Oregon and Workforce Board and the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Policy, to create this pool of discretionary funds that would be administered by the Community College and Workforce Development Department of the office. And Commissioner Cam Preuss-Brawley is here today to also answer questions about the funding. Some of this fund would be held at the statewide level for statewide initiatives such as the healthcare initiative that you heard about, other initiatives that we think could usefully use statewide leadership, especially for replication of programs, coordination, development of statewide curriculum and the like. And some of these statewide initiatives may be in concert or in collaboration with their regional efforts. And again, the notion is to hook up but not merge with economic development, but to be connected to the lottery dollars and the economic development dollars. The proposal is to use funds from the federal funds, administrative funds from the Employment Department, and the Jobs Plus dollars.
And if I might just ask for clarification, the administrative funds from the Employment Department is the CDEF fund.
Yes. Thank you, Mr.
Do you have a number on how much money is in that fund right now?
The
dollars?
Madam Chair, I don't. I imagine.
Madam Chair, I testify next. I think I can answer that when I get up.
Finally, that we propose to establish under the Oregon Workforce Investment Board a committee that will oversee the implementation and the details about the fund, the funding formula, the criteria for projects, evaluation, follow-up, and the like. Chair Heinerman has agreed to co-chair this along with Gretchen Schutte from Chemeketa Community Colleges. Representative Jeff Kropp, who is a member of the Oregon Board, has agreed to serve as a legislator on this committee. And we will have representatives from the local boards, community colleges, state agencies, business, and labor. So it will be a working committee to put into more to specify the implementation of the fund. The Office of Community College and Workforce Development will be the administrator and will write the technical rules, and they will be obviously extremely important partners to this effort. With that, I want to introduce Cher Heinerman from Intel Corporation, who has been a very valuable member of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. Would you like this on?
If yeah. I might, Ms. Halleck, just before we turn over the floor here, I noticed that in the engrossed version of the bill that you gave me last night, that there is language throughout this that vests the decision making in the Education and Workforce Policy Advisor and removes language that says in consultation with the State Workforce Investment Board and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Given the collaborative nature of the statement that you just made, can you talk to us about why this change has been made?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I neglected to discuss the Dash 7 amendments, which we are asking for your support. After this, and that is included in the hand-engrossed draft that we submitted to you includes the amendments. After this was passed unanimously by the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development, there were the partners got together, and there were some concerns that technical concerns as well as concerns about the nature of consultation in the bill and who would actually be involved in addition to Office of Community Colleges and the Oregon Workforce Board. There are a number of stakeholders that will be affected should we move forward with this fund. We developed a work group and developed in Section 4 of the new bill a technical advisory committee which will oversee all aspects of the fund. So every place that formerly said in consultation with, now there is a technical advisory committee that will oversee all of those sections of the fund. So in Section 4, that language to create a technical advisory committee with that I just had the chaired by Chair Heinerman and with representatives from community colleges, local workforce boards, the Association of Community Colleges, the Association of Oregon Counties, County Commissioners, Business and Labor, that technical committee will have oversight and be the policy driving force. And so it looks like a decline in consultation, but it's really intended as an increase, an enhancement of the level of consultation and involvement because of the important role of this advisory committee.
Thank you. We have to be completed with this hearing by 10:30.
Okay, I am finished. And
people signed up on the public testimony sheet, so I am going to turn it over to Ms. Heinerman.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Cheryl Heinerman. I manage human capital development for Intel Corporation Worldwide, and I am part of the Workforce Investment Board and the and subcommittee for both strategic planning and an executive committee and this new TAC to help us decide how to fund this money, how to spread it around, how to do the most good. And I wanted to share with you some of our strategies at Intel for human capital development. The target is top performing employees, and it really takes alliances inside the company and outside the company to make that happen. And that's what we're trying to use as a model here. For Intel, it's fairly easy. We're a big company. We have public affairs and education and workforce development and human capital development people that can marshal resources and leverage around the world, around the state, where we need it. But for most of the companies in Oregon, being small and medium-sized, they don't have the resources to do that, and they rely upon the state. And as we've already heard, they don't know where to go or what to do. And sometimes money in the region isn't flexible enough. But we're learning if we can put it in a larger pot and look at the big picture for Oregon, we can reallocate the resources and reserve a special fund for the governor to respond if he needs to some disaster. And we've seen our share in the last 4 or 5 years. And we don't want to be caught short again where people are in trouble. And I think the leverage we get is working with the business need. It has to be industry-driven. And we know from our research with the OWIB, we don't have to spend money on more research. You know, we're well aware of the economic issues, where the jobs are that pay well, where the needs are. You just heard from healthcare how badly they need nurses, and yet they can't put on like a swing shift or a night shift training program because they don't have the funds to do that. We've lobbied long and hard to get our community college partners funded, and yet they've lost money over the last biennium just because of economic conditions. It's tough. They're excellent partners, and I think you've heard from several people now there's really good pockets of work being done here, there, and everywhere. Our problem is it's not leveraged or connected, and so this is an effort to connect the dots, pool the resources, smooth the administrative costs, and get the money to the people where we need it. Use partnerships that we already have, which are very effective in community college and economic development. Get our act together. So I hope you'll support this kind of activity that does leverage it.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair calls Cam Proust-Raleigh and Debbie Lincoln. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. For the record, I am Cam Proust-Raleigh with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And here comes my partner, Debbie. In respect for your time and the fact that I have spent several days in front of this committee, and one of the things we did talk about was the Workforce Investment Act, and actually did have a vignette of a local employer who had used the current part of the current $2 million set aside for upgrading the skills of individuals who are currently working. I will just say that the department does currently administer $2 million. We don't see that there is any increased burden in administering the $6 million. There will need to be discussion in our budget before it is finalized to expand our limitation to accept other revenue sources if they were to come to the department to be added to this training fund. But that's a decision for another day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions or comments from Ms. Proust-Raleigh?
The only comment I'd make, I'm sure it's always interesting if people have no trouble spending the money, it's raising the money.
We have $2.
We're on our way.
That's double what we were.
Ms. Lincoln.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm Debbie Lincoln with the Employment Department. The answer to your question, Madam Chair, which I just double-checked, is $28 million for next biennium is our projection for the CDAF funds. CDAF stands for Supplemental Employment Department Administrative Fund. It is revenue from interest accrued on a $284 million special set-aside from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. It is not trust fund money. It's the interest earned. Because it's interest-based, that revenue has been dropping over the last couple of years, which is why I say we're keeping a close eye on our revenue projections. Hope to make this an ongoing contribution to the workforce fund, and that would be then a biennium decision.
Ms. Lincoln, is there a set of written sideboards about what CDEF money can be used for?
Madam Chair, in the statute, the money is dedicated to the administration of the Employment Department. it has been used for the employment services, the labor exchange, labor market information side of our operations almost entirely. It can be used for administration of unemployment insurance. The rest of our money comes from the federal government. This is the only real state pot that we have that's controlled by the state. And that's the extent of the restrictions on that money is what's in the statute. Requires legislative approval to use it for anything besides administration of the employment service, employment department, which is why there are amendments in here to allow that use. But it is fairly flexible.
And thank you for putting that on the record, because I would point out that that is one of the reasons why the CDEF fund has been so widely discussed in our budget rebalancing issues.
Madam Chair, we're following those discussions very closely.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordon, clarification, please. I believe we heard testimony from Margaret Halleck that said that the Jobs Plus fund was $28 million with a $4 million surplus, and the CDAF fund we're hearing from Ms. Lincoln is $28 million. We're not speaking of the same $28
million, are we? Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, no, we're not. Actually, CDAF, or the Jobs Plus, is more like $24 million. The Jobs Plus, and there were two programs, as you recall. There was the Department of Human Services Jobs Plus, and then the Employment Department Jobs Plus. Ours is aimed at unemployment insurance claimants, so anybody who's on unemployment insurance is a Jobs Plus potential client. It was a four-year program. It will sunset at the end of the 2003-05 biennium. The money was gathered as a diversion from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund account. To the extent that we put in 24, I think it's a little more than 24, but more closer to $25 million total for the 4 years. So we have about $12.5 million for each biennium. This biennium, we have spent about $8 million, which is why we've got the $4 million ending balance for this biennium. We still have the $12-plus million for the 2003-05 biennium, both the administration and the program costs of Jobs Plus, and which is why we put the $4 million on the table. If it's not spent here or for purposes of the co-chair's budget or other purposes, it would fall into the Jobs Plus account for next biennium, giving us $16 million. For various reasons, which I could go into if you want to hear them, the program doesn't allow us to, we can't spend that much money. Partly because the economy is down, there aren't Jobs Plus programs. It's a high administrative cost. About a third of the costs are administration. We figured that the $4 million at least could be better focused on the same kinds of results that Jobs Plus wants, which is to get people into jobs, get people trained into jobs, used through this fund. So that's why we put it on the table. But it is a one-time contribution to the workforce fund because the program sunsets in the following biennium, and we have no idea what, at this point, what kind of ending balance we may see at the end of 05.
I appreciate the clarification, and the explanation is very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have anything to add to Kim. We would what we would do is transfer the CDAF $2 million and the Jobs Plus $4 million to the Community College and Workforce Development Department, folded into the fund, and it would be administered through them. The Employment Department would sit on the advisory committee. We have incredible contacts locally with businesses, so our local folks would be very useful in helping to develop projects for the use of these funds. We very much support the idea of the funds and are happy, would be very happy to redirect those CDAF and Jobs Plus funds there as being probably the highest priority use of those funds at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Bates.
Just a quick statement. I'm assuming that since the business community represented by AOI and the labor community also being represented here today has no problem with CDAF funds being diverted. I mean, the nexus is that if people are trained and get back to work, you have less unemployment. And that can have an impact on on the rates paid by employers for the insurance. So I'm assuming that all parties have agreed to this as a reasonable way of spending that money in the hopes of actually putting people back to work, obviously, and maintaining the fund at a reasonable level without having to raise rates again.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes, Tim Nesbitt sits on our advisory committee. AOI sits on the advisory committee. Both the business and labor community have been very jealous of the use of those CDF funds in the past. And they both have wholeheartedly supported this use of them, which I think is a good indication of the kind of support this kind of effort has.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I will call Ron Fox, Agnes Velosa, and Bobby Lee.
Madam Chair, while they're coming up, I just thought I'd mention I had the opportunity to see this bill before. It was in our Trade and Economic Development Committee. In addition to the people that are here today, my community college president, Dr. Carrion from Portland Community College, spoke in behalf of this program, and we also had written testimony from the Commissioner of Department of Labor, I mean, of Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Thank you. Mr. Fox.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ron Fox. I'm with the Oregon Economic Community Development Department and I'm involved with the business and industry programs of the department. I'm really here just to add our strong support for this bill. I think you've heard from Tim Nesbitt, Margaret, and others about the importance of bringing the workforce development resources the state can apply to Oregon businesses closer and more responsive to their needs. I think there are a couple of points I'll just reinforce. Much of this you've heard in previous testimony. Our future out of this economic recession we're in right now, really 60 to 70% of the new jobs we'll find for Oregonians will come from our existing Oregon businesses. This fund provides the kind of flexible, responsive workforce training that those companies will need to add those employees and retrain and enhance the training of their existing workforce. And each of our industry sectors or clusters of industry have unique workforce needs, so the ability of this fund to both respond at the company level as well at the sector or cluster level is very important. I think that you've heard a couple of comments relative to the rapid response flexibility. I think an important component in the way this bill and the operations of the fund are proposed to you is that this will operate at the speed of business. This will provide the resource that businesses need to support their worker training and training of new workers in their employment and do it at the rate at which businesses need to be competitive in a global market. There's a term that I've heard used in other states that I think you've also heard comments earlier about. This is also a competitive issue for Oregon. Other states that surround us, both here on the West Coast and across the nation, use their funds in this type of constructive and competitive manner. In Michigan, which is one of the states that has a comparable fund, they use the word job attached. And I think that's a good description of how this program works, in the sense that it works with business to support their worker training for jobs attached. There's an important and ongoing workforce development responsibility that cuts throughout the entire workforce and education community for the transitional, the future workers. But this program, I think, creates a tremendous opportunity for those jobs that are in Oregon businesses. I think you've heard a good deal about how the funds will be administered. I think the workforce response teams, as envisioned by the proposal, are going to provide a coordinated and a just-in-time or on-time response to Oregon business needs. And I think the regional teams, the department is committed to this. Our regional development officers who operate throughout the state are pegged to be an integral part of these workforce response teams. They are our sort of point of contact with Oregon businesses, and we believe they can bring to those workforce response teams the kind of needs identification and a conduit to make sure Oregon businesses receive the assistance and support that this fund and this proposal can provide. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to leave time for my other panelists.
Questions or comments for Mr. Fox? Ms. Pelosi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Agnes Balassa with the Enterprise for Employment and Education, the Workforce Investment Board for Region 3, which is Marion Polk and Yamhill Counties. And rather than continue with the prepared statement I had for you all, I'm going to try to address some of the issues that you've raised. Just quickly, Workforce Investment Boards are a collection, they're a partnership, a public and private partnership dedicated to promoting, supporting, and enhancing and coordinating workforce development activities. They include all the state agencies that deal with workforce development activities. They include economic development. They include the federally funded Title I program that you've had so many questions about today. They include labor. And they are led by private businesses. So the goal with a Workforce Investment Board is to be led by the private sector so that training decisions really do have an impact on business and that business has an impact on how training is delivered. Today I'm here both as a representative of my local board but also as a representative of the larger partnership of workforce boards, the Oregon Workforce Partnership, the 7 local workforce investment boards, and we've had considerable discussion about this because we are truly stakeholders in this issue. The Title I funds that were mentioned came out of our budgets, so we're quite aware of what that meant in terms of providing programs. And the reason that we've chosen to continue to support this bill, despite the fact that some resources were redirected, is because it provides us with an opportunity to serve the whole workforce. Right now, our systems, because of the federal restrictions on these dollars and the way our systems are structured, do an excellent job of serving two legs of the workforce system. The emerging workforce, those who have not yet had an opportunity to work or are just beginning to develop the skills to work, those are in collaboration with your high schools as well as with your community colleges and the training programs. They are people who are getting back into work. The other leg that we've served really, really well are your transitional workers, people who've been laid off and dislocated, who have needed retraining programs in order to move into new career opportunities. However, our boards and the private sector majority on our boards have been clear with us that the third leg of the stool is the one that we're missing, and that's the current workforce. We have a limited ability to serve them because of the way our funds are designed right now and the lack of flexibility. And what that means is that when a business expands in our community or a business wants to stay in our community, we have a limited ability to work with them to be able to retain them and to provide the training that they need in order to continue to thrive. And it's really the kind, I mean, when you come to a bottom line, as we talked about the CDAF funds and all the other people that are looking at those, that's what will ultimately create the tax base so we don't have to make these decisions in the future about trying to rob from one fund to another. Our mission in this is really to be able to help people move up into better jobs, to have the skills to compete for those. And so while in the short term you're serving a business and you're serving their needs directly, in the long term you're making all Oregonians more competitive through an approach like this and potentially creating a vision for Oregon and a sense of Oregon as a place where the workforce is skilled and a business would want to locate. So you have that long-term impact from this that is hugely beneficial to all of us. We were excited about this fund for a couple of other reasons. It recognizes that while you have statewide strategic approaches that are vitally important, it also recognizes that you have local approaches that are vitally important. Those who can be closest to the businesses and understand the unique resources within a community and package those together are what you have on those rapid response teams. And so it recognizes both dynamics in there. It recognizes that there's diversity in Oregon and its economy. It's broad enough that we can figure out how to work within it. And we have every reason to believe that it will provide the flexibility that we've been lacking along the way. We've been in consultation with the governor's office from the beginning on this, so this is not a surprise to us. It's something where we've had opportunities for input and recommendation based on the fact that we've been the ones closest to this funding source.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lee.
Deferring my time to our board chair, Faith Squire.
Chair Morgan and members of the committee, thank you for the time this morning. My name is Dave Squire. I'm chairman of the board of the Workforce Investment Board for Region 2, which is Portland, Multnomah County, Washington County, and Tillamook County. And I would like to, you know, support everything everybody has said here today. We're in full support of that. I just want to make two quick points. From a business standpoint, what we like about this bill is that it focuses resources, recognizes the need of partnership between business, workforce development, economic development agencies, and as Ron said, it is fast. We need fast responses. We make decisions very quickly. We don't have time to go through, you know, multiple committees, multiple organizations. So the fact that this gives a single point of reference is extremely important to us. I should also say that there's a lot of talk about competition between the states. We are also competing with China, Vietnam, India, and who knows who else in the future. So I just...
Thank you very much. I have people signed up to testify on the witness registration sheet, so I will call now Mr. Silverman from Mount Hood Community College, Andrea Henderson from the Community College Association, and Dave Fiscom. Mr. Silverman, what's
going on? I don't have any more money. I'm sorry.
You've taken it all.
It's a buck a bill.
It's a buck a bill? Oh, come on. It's getting too expensive here, guys.
Please proceed, Mr. Silverman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I, again, appreciate having an opportunity to talk with you for a moment. I noticed your time is very short, so I'll try to be short. I do want to emphasize the importance and the critical nature of the community college as part of this new coalition or this new organization. The community college has been and will continue to be the major provider of job training, both for pre-employment and for incumbent workers. A lot of the discussion today has said that Oregon does not have a coordinated good system of providing that kind of training, and I have to say that the community colleges are excellent at what we do. It is incumbent upon the state to take care of their community colleges and make sure that we have adequate funding. I personally, in my district, and that's all I'll speak for, we work intimately with LSI, with Fujitsu before they had to leave, Microchip, who's coming in. We work all the time, one-on-one, with each business. I sit on three boards. I sit on the Workforce Development Board, I sit on the Economic Development Board, and I sit with our own college board, all trying to do the same thing, and that is service business quickly in an appropriate way. We do it by coordination, by collaboration, by dedication, and by I wonder if there's any more applications in there. But anyway, we do it the best we possibly can within our resources. So I just am here to support the bill and to say that it is a system that needs work, but the community colleges have been effective in the past, and it will continue to be the strong partner for these kinds of effort in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, representing 17 community colleges in Oregon. And I just very briefly wanted to let you know that the Oregon Community College Association is supportive of this legislation. Our colleges across the state, as President Silverman indicated, are actively involved with their businesses to provide training to the businesses for their employees, and have done so in the past, will continue to do so in the future, and are supportive of this legislation. Thank you.
Mr.
Madam Chair, for the record, Dave Fiska. I'm here representing T-Mobile, formerly some may recognize the name VoiceStream. T-Mobile is a global wireless carrier, the third largest character as well, perhaps, Representative Bates. Very active. I know that. I've got my money. Do you have change, by the way?
No. But we'll take your money.
Somehow I knew that. I thought it was important for me today just to add my voice to that of Senator Clarno, who was here, as well as Representative Westland, whose letter was entered for the record. This is a very practical issue for T-Mobile. T-Mobile is on the cusp of a decision about locating a call center in this state or in Idaho. Will at least 600 employees, perhaps as many as 800 employees, family wage jobs. That decision is pending as we speak, could be made literally in days. And this is the kind of resource contemplated in House Bill 2302 is the kind of resource that could come into play to help with that decision and to make Oregon competitive, frankly, in this case, one-on-one against Idaho, which Mr. Fox could have mentioned has a resource similar to Michigan's that can be brought to bear to provide training dollars. I have submitted a letter for the record from Laura Altschul, the person at T-Mobile, to my report, who was also responsible for citing. And I won't read that letter to you by any means, but would refer you to it relative to the kind of training necessary for these employees in Redmond. My purpose is to endorse the concept of this kind of legislation and to express appreciation to all who have gotten us this far from the state of Oregon, from the governor, the Economic Development Department staff, the senator, the representative, and a number of others. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions as you head to the floor.
Thank you. Questions or comments for the panel? You've gotten off the hook easily.
Thank you.
That completes the list of people that have been invited to testify and people that signed up to testify. And so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2302. Mr. Bender, I do not believe we have any further things scheduled for subsequent meetings at this point.
No, actually, Madam Chair, you do have a meeting scheduled tomorrow, and that is for work session on House Bill 3044, which relates to collection of monies owed to school districts. You had a public hearing on that earlier.
Then, without further business before the committee, I will adjourn this meeting, and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Don't let